Good morning. It is time to get up with Do You Still Believe Land? The banged up Browns looking to save their season. We've got the Thursday night highlights. Then two of the NFL's best going head to head with absolutely everything at stake. Who has the edge Sunday in Nashville? And oh, what a night. Threes and home runs galore. You need to see it all. And you will as we get up with you starting right now. It is a football Friday and we're at the Seaport and we're delighted you've chosen to get up with us. Ready to roll. Graziano is here. Sacho is here making plays. And that's not all. Ryan Clark is ready to go. He's got a list to go today. And the doctor is in. Dr. Ninkovich diagnosing injuries along the way as we get up and begin with the beginning of week 7 of the NFL season, the Broncos and the Browns on Thursday night. First game Baker Mayfield has ever missed in his career. But Sacho, the one thing, whether it's Case Keenum or anybody at quarterback, the Browns can do is run the ball.
Yeah, behind D'Ernest Johnson in that offensive line. Didn't matter if Chubb was injured, Kareem Hunt was injured, D'Ernest Johnson got it done.
What did I say? The one thing they can do is run the ball.
Yes, yes. Getting in the end zone by any means necessary.
Browns on their first drive just like that, 7-0. It's 10-0, first play of the second quarter. Teddy Bridgewater, yikes.
Yeah, questionable throw. Teddy's got to get it. He's got to see the safety number one. That's a bad play.
Wasted opportunity for Denver. Minute left in the first half. Browns still up 10-0. I want you just to watch Von Miller. The rest of the play is not the important piece of this. You hate to see it as he will run into his teammate and go down with an ankle.
Yeah, he's one of the elite edge rushers in the NFL. He's been that way for a decade. This is what you hate to see, but hopefully Von gets well.
X-rays came back clean. He says he hopes to play next week. Browns up 10-0 at the half. Third quarter, Broncos trying desperately to stay in this game. And when I say desperate, watch Melvin Gordon fighting for the end.
Yeah, they say football's a game of inches. Whatever it takes, staying on your feet, getting in the end zone, keeping your team in the game.
And in the game, they are. It's 10-7 in the third, late in the quarter. Now, Cleveland going for it on a fourth down. We know Baker Mayfield can run with it. So can Case Keenum.
Yeah, this is the game. What a gutsy play by Case Keenum. Getting the first down, avoiding defenders, stretching, clawing. Once again, whatever it takes.
Ball comes out, but they rule it at down at the one-yard line. So Keenum going all out. And among those who love to see it, Baker Mayfield fired up, and then Keenum gets his touchdown to Johnny Stanton.
Yeah, play action pass. You've been running, running, running. Goal line. You got to defend the pass as well.
So it's back to a double-digit lead, 17-7. 5 minutes to go. Denver not giving up, and they've got something in the young running back, Javonte Williams.
Yeah, Javonte Williams, he kind of shined yesterday when you talk about Denver's running offense. He's been playing well all season. He's special.
That's 17-14, so the Browns need first downs to run out the clock, and right here, 3rd and 7, they will run it, and they will get it.
Yeah.
Johnson finds a way to get 8 when they needed 7, and that's all she wrote. D'Ernest Johnson, 146 yards rushing. Who needs Chubb and Hunt? Browns win at 17-14. They entered the week leading the NFL in rushing yards per game, yards per rush, yards after contact per rush. That's how good this offensive line is. They did all of this without Chubb, without Hunt, and they're banged up as well. So quite a few takeaways from this one. But Ninkovich, I will start with you, because when I asked you what is your number one takeaway from this game, you gave us an interesting thought this morning. What is it?
It's a nightmare for Baker Mayfield. And why is it a nightmare? Because he's watching the backup quarterback go out there and perform and win football games. And if you are the Cleveland Browns, why would you pay Baker Mayfield $40+ million a year when you can put another quarterback in there, plug and play, that's going to run the football, going to do the play action passes? So for me, when I think about Baker Mayfield, I don't necessarily know if he is the guy that is going to be worth $40+ million. And
yeah,
looking to the future, we know that the team is stacked. They have a running game. They have a great offensive line. They have a great defense. So does it make sense to tie up north of $100 million if you're trying to pay your quarterback and then potentially have to lose some of the guys that you had to pay defensively? So again, I think that this could be a issue for Baker Mayfield. Maybe that's why he was biting his nails on the sideline. I don't know.
RC, what do you think?
I think that ship has already sailed on paying Baker that type of money. I think Baker will get paid. I think Baker has shown that he's a franchise quarterback. But what the Cleveland Browns showed you last night is that they are a running football team. And I think sometimes they even need to be reminded of it, that even when Baker Mayfield comes back, this is who they are. Now, the smartest thing that Kevin Stefanski and his team did was sit Baker last night, right? Try to make Baker play through this injury, because as Baker has been playing through this injury, he's been a bottom third quarterback, and not a bottom third quarterback in the sense that they can still win with him, but a bottom third quarterback that they are winning in spite of Baker Mayfield in the games they actually win. Now, I'm not as bullish on Case Keenum as Rob Ninkovich is, because I also realize that the Denver Broncos have only beat the Jaguars, the Giants, and the Jets. You know, we can grab Greeny, and we can get, you know, we can get Fink, and we can get Allie, and we can go get Zach. These are all people that produced the show, and we would have an opportunity against those teams. And so I'm not saying that Denver was gangbusters, but last night Case Keenum did what he had to do, and that's the reason he's the backup. He found a way to win a game. Baker Mayfield's the starting quarterback of this team. They just have to remember that Baker Mayfield isn't the reason that they win and play football that way.
Now, RC, you're selling Fink short. He runs a 4-3, but that's neither here nor there. Graziano, that's an inside joke. The whole staff is laughing, I promise you. Graziano, let me come to you on this thought here, because the Baker of it all is fascinating, and he's talking about a fracture in the shoulder and all the rest of that and how it plays into the contract. There's a lot there.
Yeah, and look, it sounds like based on what he told Fox Sports before the game last night that he could be out longer than just the one game. A lot to figure out with that shoulder injury. I think Nico's point is an interesting one. I'm just not sure that this game necessarily matters. That, and it's not like Keenum played so well that they would think about starting him over a healthy Baker Mayfield. He did win a game against a Denver team that employs the questionable defensive tactic of never tackling anyone, which I don't know if that's going to hold up over a whole season. But I think that the key point to understand on Baker in the contract is the Browns like him. They want him around. They would sign him long term, but there's a number that I don't think they're going to go over. And so far, it's not a number that he has liked. And if he doesn't get there, then they might have to look at other options.
All right. So there are considerations here, big picture and small. That's the big. Let's go to the small, Sacho. This is a team that came into this season thinking Super Bowl thoughts. They have been decimated, but a win is a win, regardless of who you play on a Thursday night with all those injuries. Is this a Browns team that, as it gets healthy again, that can still achieve the goals that it had at the beginning of the year?
Yeah, absolutely. They absolutely can, and the reason why is what we saw last night. Decimated team by injuries, a team without your starting quarterback, yet you still find a way to win the game with your backup. Why? You have rebuilt this team. Back in 2017 or 16 or so, I remember playing against the Browns. They had a bad offensive line, a bad team in general. Now the team has been rebuilt. You have J.C. Treader out on offensive line at center leading the charge. So no matter if you have Kareem Hunt, who wasn't there, or Nick Chubb, who wasn't there, you have someone else who steps in, right? To our joke, Fink could go back there and run and get 100 and some, maybe not 100, 50 yards behind that offensive line. And so that's the difference. It's offensive line play, number one. Number two, it's the defense, right? Denver couldn't do anything. They didn't get a first down in the first half. And so that's what's the difference between this team. They found a way to win even without their key players.
RC, same question. Is this a Browns team as it gets healthy?
No.
Division is tough, too. Go ahead, Ryan.
No, listen, and we talked about the roster on Monday, and Dan mentioned that it was a 6-0 roster that was playing 3-3 football. Well, they're playing 3-3 football because they're a 3-3 football team. Right now, they're above 500 because you go out and you win this game against the Denver Broncos, but the way that this team plays defensively is too inconsistent. Also, when we watch this team, they do have to dominate in the way we saw them dominate against Minnesota, dominate against Chicago defensively, dominate against Denver in the first half. This offense and this defense, they aren't playing complementary football to the point where you believe in them when you're talking about teams like the Buffalo Bills, talking about teams like the Baltimore Ravens, the Los Angeles Chargers, and I think to an extent, the Kansas City Chiefs, because they still have Patrick Mahomes. The thing that happens to the Cleveland Browns is at some point, they're going to need a great equalizer, and that can be the run game, but we all know it has to come from under center, and the Cleveland Browns do not have that.
Go ahead, Grass.
It's an interesting point about how they have to dominate, right? They need to get on top of you. They won the coin toss last night and took took the ball. Yeah. You always see the coach defer to the second half.
Right.
They took the ball. They wanted to score first, and that matters to Cleveland the way they play.
And by the way, if you see a smile on my face, it is because I did pick up D'Ernest Johnson on my fantasy team this week, and that worked out awfully well. All right, it's a Football Friday. We will have tons of football, but I told you at the beginning, there were some great performances last night, and that man was the author of the best. Braves, Dodgers, Game 5, NLCS. Atlanta looking to put it away in L.A., and it started well for the Braves. Top of one, no score. Braves have a runner on. Freddie Freeman. It's high and it's far, and it's gone. His seventh home run in his postseason career. So the Braves, a 2-0 lead, but the Dodgers will get hot. Bottom of two. They're down 2-1 with a runner at first. Oh, crushed. That is Chris Taylor. Dodgers take a 3-2 lead, and they were just getting started. Taylor was just getting started. Bottom of five. Dodgers up 4-2. Taylor at the plate again with a runner on. Second verse, same as the first. This one an 0-2 fastball straightaway center. His second of the night. Dodgers a 6-2 lead. So we go to the bottom of the seventh. It's still 6-2. Taylor again. Taylor again. That's his third home run of the night. What a night it was for Chris Taylor. 4 for 5, 3 homers, 6 ribs. A curtain call as the Dodgers keep their season alive. 11-2 the final. They head to Atlanta to try and win two more. This team has been unbelievable in elimination games. Taylor, the first player in postseason history with a 3-home run game when facing elimination. He's also the 5th player in National League history with 3 homers in a postseason game. The first to do it since former Dodger Kike Hernandez did it in 2017. So that was a great offensive performance that involved 3 home runs. Speaking of great offense and a lot of threes, oh, the chef was cooking. Just take a look at Steph Curry, as only he can do it. Everything we're about to show you happened in the first quarter last night of the Warriors and the Clippers. It's just Steph from three. It's Steph from three. He was 5 of 5 from three, 9 of 9 from the floor for 25 points in the first quarter alone. And Golden State opens up the big lead, but Paul George would respond. Second quarter, Clips down 15, but George hanging around, knocking down a 3 of his own. It's a 12-point game. Now it's an 8-point lead, and it's George again from 3. He was so good when they lost Kawhi in the playoffs last year, Clippers actually had a 1-point lead at the half. Let's take it to where this one was decided. A minute to go, Warriors down 109-108. Who else? Steph Curry. Knocking it down. He had 45 points. Warriors up by 2. Less than 10 seconds to go. Clippers are down 4. They're going to George. He had 29. It's a 1-point game. 3 seconds left. Clippers down 2. It's Zubats at the line. He needs to miss this on purpose, and they need to get it back and knock it down. You got the first part right, but the second part, they will not get it off. That would not have counted from George, even if it had gone. Warriors hold on, and they win a thriller. 115-113, your final. Steph Curry turned 33 years old on March 14. Since then, he has 6 45-point games. The only players with more such games at 33 or older, you see them there, Hall of Famers Michael Jordan and Bernard King. All right, we are just getting started. Coming up, 2 of the NFL's best going head-to-head with absolutely everything at stake. Who has the edge Sunday in Nashville? Plus, another twist in the Ben Simmons saga. What's going to happen this morning when he meets with the Sixers? Woj is here with the very latest as we get up with you on ESPN. Get Up is brought to you by the Sonic Grilled Cheese Double Burger for a limited time only at Sonic. All right, it's time for Overreaction Friday. I'm going to make a series of sort of provocative statements, and Dan will tell us whether or not they seem like an overreaction. Let's start with this. If I were to say Deshaun Watson will start a game for the Dolphins this season, would that be an overreaction?
I think it would be an overreaction, yes. I'm still not sure he's going to even get traded there. Even if he did, it's not a certainty he would start for them this season. He'd have to get up to speed with the offense. The commissioner's office could put him on the exempt list. There's all kinds of things that could prevent it from happening. I think it's too soon to say that.
All right, the next one is about a big battle in the AFC North. If I were to say the winner of Sunday's game, Bengals-Ravens, is going to win that division, would that be an overreaction?
It would not be an overreaction. Think about if the Ravens win, they're already the only 5-1 team in the conference. They'd be the only 6-1 team in the conference. If the Bengals win, they'd be tied for first with a very impressive confidence-building win on their resume. Absolutely not an overreaction.
All right, and then one more. If I were to say the Titans
are going to beat Kansas City Sunday and drop the Chiefs to below 500. Would that be an overreaction?
Not as long as they're giving the ball to that guy, Derrick Henry. The Chiefs defense has struggled this year. This game is in Nashville. The Titans just beat up a very good Buffalo Bills defense on Monday night. I think the Titans absolutely have a chance to win this game.
Well, let's talk about just how important this game could be, particularly for Kansas City. We came into this season talking about whether or not they could go 17-0. If they lose this game, our analytics say they have just a 61% chance of making the playoffs. They enter with a 72% chance. If they win, it goes to 80%, so we will see. So we have the two real genuine superstars on display in this game. You got Derrick Henry on one side, Patrick Mahomes on the other. And, Nick, you were telling us before the show, you think Henry has a chance to go off this Sunday?
Yeah, of course he does. If the Tennessee Titans were able to run the football over a top five defense in the Buffalo Bills, what are they going to do to the 32nd ranked defense of the Kansas City Chiefs? So they definitely have a chance because of that running game. I'm picking Tennessee here. I'm picking them to beat Kansas City. Kansas City has a terrible defense. They can't stop a nosebleed. So when you look at the Tennessee Titans and their ability to run the football, what does that do? You win the time of possession battle, keeps the ball away from the Kansas City's offense, which we know Patrick Mahomes is explosive and can score at any time. So for me, I'm going with the Tennessee Titans.
It's an interesting way maybe to look at this game, RC. Who has the bigger day? Henry on one side or Mahomes on the other?
You know what? They're both going to go absolutely nuts. Derrick Henry is going to run all over the Kansas City Chiefs, and Patrick Mahomes is going to go absolutely berserk on these backup corners for the Tennessee Titans. Did you not watch the game last week or this Monday? I mean, Josh Allen was just backing up and throwing pick a corner. He's like, oh, we'll pick him this play. We'll pick him this play. And all these passes were complete. The reason that the Tennessee Titans end up winning the game was because it was 4th-and-1 and not 4th-and-5, and the Buffalo Bills didn't have to pass. And so when you look at this matchup, this is a matchup of two defenses that are struggling and the kryptonite coming in on the opposite side. I don't think Derrick Henry gets tackled all night. It'll probably look much like D'Ernest Johnson from last night. I also think that the Kansas City Chiefs will not be stopped in the pass game. This will be a shootout. It may be a shootout much like a couple of years ago where the Tennessee Titans can win by a field goal late, or Patrick Mahomes gets in the groove and they do win. But I don't think there's going to be defense played on either side of the football. And then that means it will come down to can Ryan Tannehill make the plays that he made in the pass game, the few he needed to last week, or can that Tennessee Titans defense get one stop on Patrick Mahomes late? And I don't believe that they can. Kansas City Chiefs probably edge out the Tennessee Titans.
Boy, that's a fascinating number. That is the immovable object against the resistible force, if you will, of the Kansas City defense. What do you think, Mahomes or Henry? Sacha, who do you think has the bigger day on Sunday?
Yeah, I think Henry has the bigger day. Just statistically, his last five games is averaging 145 yards per game. That's on average. And then he has 10 touchdowns on the season. We're barely over a third of the way through the season. Last year he had 17. He's on pace for a big year. But I still believe that Kansas City will win the game. To RC's point, if it turns out being a shootout, I trust Kansas City and Patrick Mahomes in a shootout before I trust Ryan Tannehill at quarterback in a shootout.
Yeah, it's interesting the way the Kansas City season has gone. As I opened the conversation by saying, like, we were talking about them going unbeaten. Now they need to win this game just to not make people wonder if they're even going to make the playoffs.
Yeah, but even if they lose, like, everyone's like, okay, they're going to be 3-4 and 61%. Even if Kansas City loses, they're still going to be okay. Their issues have to do with them, not with who they're playing against. Their issues have to do with drop passes and Patrick Mahomes making questionable decisions. But if he starts getting his mind right and stop making questionable passes, and his receivers like Tyreek Hill at running back start catching the ball, we will not be worried about Kansas City. Last week against the Washington football team, they had 3 turnovers and still won the game. Clean up the turnovers and you will be fine. Even if you lose, which I think you're going to win, Kansas City is going to be A-okay.
They played one really good half last week against Washington. Let's see if they can put that together moving forward. So I asked each of you to put together an upset that you like, and it sounds to me, Ninko, like you're looking here. Give me an upset this weekend.
Yeah, I'm going with the Tennessee Titans upsetting the Kansas City Chiefs. And to me, with that running game, like I said before, it's not surprising that Tennessee is going to have a chance in this football game. I know everyone's going to say, what is he talking about? It's this Kansas City Chiefs. This year's Kansas City Chiefs, they don't look like they did in the past. So for me, I'm going with the Tennessee Titans.
Oh, I like it. Sacho, give me an upset this weekend.
Yeah, this may not sound like an upset, but I'm going Colts over 49ers. Both teams have been struggling, but a lot of people have been doubting the Colts. We understand their record. They have a losing record throughout their first five games, but they are rising as a team, and so I think they beat the San Francisco 49ers. Obviously, Jimmy G may play, but he's still a little bit injured. Trey Lance may not. Trent Williams may not play. So all these injuries on 49ers, and then the Colts playing well. I like the Colts over San Francisco.
I like it. How about you, RC? Give me an upset this weekend.
You know, I'm going to go with the Cincinnati Bengals, and I've been on the Lamar train, and I love Lamar, and Lamar is absolutely killing it, but y'all asked me to pick two. Sacho picked the Colts over the 49ers, so I was left with this one, even though I didn't really want it. If Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase could come up with some huge plays down the field, which we've seen them do this year, and the Baltimore Ravens, until last week, hadn't played well in the secondary, and this defense of the Cincinnati Bengals is improving. Trey Hendrickson up front is doing extremely well. The Bengals just might edge out the Ravens and show us that they are a team that's a for real playoff contender.
That's exactly right. If anyone isn't buying into Cincinnati yet, A, they haven't watched them play, and B, they will certainly have to start if they win that game this Sunday. We're continuing in just a moment here. How last year's blunder against the Bears changed everything for Tampa Tom. Can Brady avoid the upset this season? We're talking about that game, and we're talking more about that man, Steph Curry, on fire last night. Can Golden State win the West? That's the question. Big Perk has the answer. He joins us live next. Get up on ESPN. We are back on Get Up, and if you are just joining us, Browns Broncos kicking off Thursday night football last night. Baker Mayfield, first game he's ever missed with injury. But Sam Acho, the one thing we know the Browns can do regardless is run the ball.
Yes, D'Ernest Johnson had 146 rushing yards behind that dominant offensive line. What a game.
Yes, that to the delight of those of us who picked him up on our fantasy team this week.
Man.
This was delightful too. And that's how they kept the opening drive. 7-0 Browns early, late third now. Case Keenum playing in place, Sacho, of Baker Mayfield.
Yeah, and he's a great backup quarterback, right? He comes in, he does his job, and he wins when he needs to win. That's what he did in this game.
Yeah, that was picking up a big fourth down there conversion that puts them on the one, and that would lead to this.
Yeah, once again, you've been running all night, and then you do a play action at the goal line. Defense is pressing. All of a sudden, you get somebody wide open.
Touchdown to Johnny Stanton. The Browns extend the lead, and then now they're just looking to run the clock out at the end. They need one more first down to win it, and there it is with D'Ernest Johnson. So he had the big night, and the Browns get the win that they need. Look, a win is a win, especially under the circumstances that they were in. So they go to 4-3 behind Johnson, his first career start. He came into the league in 2019. He had less than 200 total career rushing yards coming into the game. He had 146 last night, fifth most for any player in any game so far this season. So that was last night. How about Sunday? Bears, Bucks, an interesting game. The 44-year-old Tom Brady, almost exactly twice as old as his counterpart Justin Fields. Biggest age difference between quarterbacks in NFL history. Brady, by the way, has won 10 straight starts against rookie quarterbacks. The analytics love Brady this week. ESPN's FBI giving the Bucks an 81% chance to win. That was, equates basically to a 12-point margin. Flashback week 5 last year. That was the game you might recall where Brady lost track of downs. He thought it was third down. It was fourth down. It was actually fifth down. Brady talked about that mistake.
It seems like a long time ago, but actually it wasn't that long ago. So, yeah, that was that hasn't happened very often in my career. For some reason, that happened at that moment. But, yeah, that was a tough loss, and I think we learned a lot from that loss that last year. We have a chance to win the game in 2 minutes by going down and kicking a field goal, and we don't get the job done.
So, obviously, the Brady and Fields of it all makes this game interesting in so many different ways. And, RC, I sort of like the question you brought up in our meeting this morning. What is it you're interested to see this week?
Let Justin Fields go. That's what they need to do. They need to come into the game, continue playing the defense that we've seen them play throughout this season, because the defense have kept them in this game, right? It's 17-14 last week until Aaron Rodgers figures out that he has ownership in the Chicago Bears and he lets all of their fans know. That defense can keep them close, but if you don't let Justin Fields go, if you don't let him push the ball down the field, I don't think you have an opportunity to win this game against a team that is explosive as the Tampa Bay Buccaneers can. can be. Justin Fields, since the Cleveland Browns game, has been the top five quarterback from the pocket. You know how I know that? Because Himbo just texted me during the commercial break to let me know. And so if you have a quarterback who is making those plays from the pocket, you understand what it looked like when we saw the play action game against the Detroit Lions, give him some of those opportunities. Give him some of those Allen Robinson opportunities, some of those Darnell Mooney opportunities. You know you can run the football. You know you can play defense. But when you start to hit the big play, Chicago Bears, that's when you have opportunities to beat good teams and stay in the game with good teams. It's time to let Justin Fields see what that arm can do and that athleticism.
Unleash Justin Fields. Graziano, is it likely we will see that Sunday?
I'd be surprised, honestly. I think the Bears are prioritizing the development of this player. I'm with you. I'd like to see it. I think it'd be a lot of fun. I'd be surprised if that's the way they go. I think they want to win the way you're talking about in terms of defense and holding them down. But, yeah, man, I mean, the Bears score 16 points a game. The Buccaneers have 16 points when they get off the bus. Like, I don't understand how they're going to pull this off.
There's an interesting conversation to be had, and this may not be the moment to do it, about which way is the right way to develop these young quarterbacks, throw them to the wolves like some of the other teams have, or be this kind of, it seems, extra cautious the way the Bears are being. One way or another, that guy is going to be the problem this weekend, right, Sacho? That you have to be able to match what Tom Brady is doing, and that's not easy to do.
Yeah, that's the issue. Like, Tom Brady, explosively with that offense, they've been playing at a high level. And we go back to last year. Last year in this game, I kind of believe that the Bears are going to beat the Bucs because the Bucs were trying to find their stride with Tom Brady in his first year, and the Bears had just made a quarterback switch. Whereas this year, when you watch the Bears play, I don't give them a chance. Like, we talk about exploding the offense and throwing it downfield. They haven't done that, whether it's Matt Nagy calling plays or Bill Lazor calling plays. And I don't think it's about protecting your quarterback. It's just about the way they're calling plays. You don't give your team a chance to win. We saw it in week one against the LA Rams. It's like, dude, how can we win this game? And so I don't think the Bears have a chance with the way that they've been playing football. Now, to RC's point, if you get Allen Robinson involved with downfield passing, Darnell Mooney involved with downfield passing, then maybe, just maybe, you can keep it close. But if not, you got no shot.
Nick, how about this Bears defense against your old buddy Brady? What can this Bears defense do to make him uncomfortable enough that gives Chicago some chance to win this game?
Well, they're going to have to do what they did last year. And there's a classic picture of Tom Brady looking at Mac like, man, are you hitting me again? And if the Chicago Bears can get after Tom Brady consistently down after down, that's when things go bad. And that's when the quarterback, any quarterback, gets frustrated. If there's a lot of pressure in his face and he has to force the issue, he has to get the ball out of his hands quickly, that's when you start forgetting what down it is. But I have a sense that Tom Brady doesn't even want to get into fourth down. So he's going to try and throw all over the Chicago defense. And the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, just like Acho said, they are different than they were last year. Last year, they were trying to figure themselves out. I think right now they know exactly who they are. So they're going to be throwing this football. I don't think the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are going to have any issue. And I think the Chicago Bears are going to have a hard time keeping up.
It's kind of hard to believe. Tom Brady was 43 when these teams played last year. How much he's grown since then? How much the Buccaneers have grown since that time? I got to leave it there because the basketball guy, we have much, much, much more football to go as we continue. Right now, it's also time for our DraftKings poll question of the day. Will Tom Brady throw three or more touchdowns against that Bears defense on Sunday? That's the question. DraftKings is the official daily fantasy partner of the NFL this Sunday only. New players can play free for over $1 million in total prizes when you make your first deposit. Download the DraftKings app and sign up with the code GETUP. Meanwhile, to the hoop, let's run the floor. Don't sleep on the Heat. In the Eastern Conference, Miami got off to a scorching start last night in their first game, just destroying the Bucks. They outscored the world champs 40-17 in the first, went on to win it 137-95. Jimmy Butler at 21, Giannis held to just 15. In Atlanta, the Hawks used a huge third quarter. They blew out the Mavericks, 113-87. Trae Young didn't shoot very well. He did finish with 19 points and 14 assists. Luka Doncic held to just 18 in the loss. And as we showed you at the beginning of the show, Steph Curry was unbelievable last night. In the first quarter, he hit all nine of his shots, including five threes, 25 in the first, finished with 45 on the night. Warriors beat the Clippers 115-113, and that brings us to this man. Big Perk is ready to go. Kendrick Perkins, thanks for getting up early here. And as we look at what Steph Curry did last night, the season that he had last year, and picking up right where he left off, what is he right now in this league as you watch Steph?
Well, Greeny, first of all, I came to the conclusion last night that I'm jealous of Steph Curry. One thing about you and Steph Curry that y'all have in common is that y'all got colorful eyes. Growing up, I wanted colorful eyes, but that's another story. But listen, I will say this, Greeny. Steph Curry is culture, okay? He's culture. We already know what type of player, fantastic player, and a special player that he is. But when you look at Steph Curry, what he does so well, moving without the ball. He's one of the best ball screeners at the point guard position that this game has ever seen. And when you watch him play, it's starting to rub off on the others. You see guys like Andrew Wiggins, Jordan Poole, Damian Lee, they starting to cut without the basketball. And when you look at the Golden State Warriors, even against the Lakers, they had 31 assists. Last night, they had 27 assists. That ball is passing around like the collection plate at Sunday service. So when I look at Steph Curry, he's just one of one, Greeny.
He is, and they will get Klay Thompson back, we expect, right around Christmas time. Watch out for the Warriors in the West. Meanwhile, of course, the huge story in the NBA continues to be in Philadelphia and continues to revolve around Ben Simmons, and it is a developing story. Simmons expected to meet with the Sixers later this morning to discuss his future with the team. Simmons wants out. But in an interview with a Philadelphia radio station, the president of the team there, Daryl Morey, reiterated they're not going to be in any rush to trade him. Listen to what he said.
Right now, any sort of trade, which obviously Ben Simmons wants, the best thing we can do is get role players back. That makes no sense. People should buckle in. I mean, this is going to go a long time because our only path, my only job is to help us give the best chance to win the title. Ben Simmons is a difference maker, so if we can get him back, he will help us win the title. If we can trade Ben Simmons for a difference maker, we will do it.
A fascinating situation and not clear where the end is in sight. Woj gets up with us early here. He knows all. Woj, what is the very latest on the big picture here with Simmons and his future?
Greeny, I mean, this is a standoff. And the Sixers are going to try to keep forcing Ben Simmons to come in, to practice, to get in the lineup and play. And every day he doesn't do that, they can fine him for games missed, practices missed, meetings missed, and those fines have been accumulating. And so the last thing they want to do is let Ben Simmons leave the team, go off and work on his own where he could get paid, and then they lose their leverage, because the leverage the Sixers have right now on Ben Simmons is being able essentially to keep him from really earning money this season. And so they're going to continue to try to do that and really, I think, wear him down to the point where he does come back and play and he gets involved. Because as Daryl Morey said, listen, if they're going to win, they need him on the floor. And if they're going to trade him, I think for, you know, the kind of trade package they want, you know, I think they're going to need him on the floor and playing well again. Because right now, and really for the last 4 months, the deals that are out there, they're not good enough to trade Ben Simmons for with 4 years left on his deal.
I think that's the question that so many fans probably have. What sense can you give us of what it is people are offering? They all know he's in a situation, and by he I mean Morey, that he has to make a deal one way or the other, so that hurts his leverage. What do we know about what the interest is in making a deal for Simmons around the league right now?
Listen, the Sixers could get sort of the kind of deal, maybe a little more modified, that Brooklyn got, that Houston got for James Harden. Young player, draft picks. Philly doesn't want, now listen, they would love to add draft picks into a deal or a good young player, but they want back an all-star level, a high-level player that they can plug into the lineup with Joel Embiid in his prime, with Tobias Harris in his prime. But Philly is not looking for those kinds of packages, and so it is very difficult for them, and they've been unable so far to find kind of that high-level all-star player someone wants to give back. Teams want to add that kind of a, they want to add Simmons to that kind of a player. And so those deals aren't available to them. And so they're going to just hold on to Simmons because, as Daryl Morey said, trading him for role players, that pushes them further away from a championship. So when he says, we'll go 4 years with this under Ben Simmons, I don't think they'll go 4 years, but I do think they'd go a full year of doing this.
Wow, so buckle up might really be the right way to put it. Big Perk, give me some players' perspective on all this. How do you see it shaping up? What do you make of it?
Well, Greeny, I'm gonna take it a step further. Listen, this is not just about Ben Simmons and the 76ers. This is about the players and the ownership. This is a standoff between these two parties. And let me tell you why, okay? I knew that it was going to come to this point where one owner was going to stand on the front line and say, you know what? Enough of this. We're not bound down to guys trying to force their way out. And so what's happening is Daryl Morey talked on the radio yesterday. You know why? Because he has the full support of his ownership. And what happens behind the scenes is that owners are now starting to talk and say, you know what? Hey, enough is enough. We're tired of guys making this type of money and acting the way that they are. We look at the James Harden situation. You look at the Anthony Davis situation. All I can say is that the owners right now are looking forward to the next 3 or 4 years when the CBA is up.
This is going to be fascinating again in the short term and the long term. Woj, awesome. Big Perk, we'll check with you later. So much coming up, and we will have Philadelphia tonight on ESPN. We've got the doubleheader, and the stars will be out. We're going to have KD and the Nets in Philly taking on Embiid and the Sixers, and we'll have the very latest on that whole situation. That game is 7:30 Eastern, and it's followed by a great one out west. The defending conference champion Suns taking on LeBron and the Lakers. We'll get your night started tonight with NBA Countdown 7 Eastern right here on ESPN. Meanwhile, as we continue this morning, the surprise showdown in the AFC North. How Lamar Jackson avoids the upset against Joe Cool and the Bengals. Plus, Aaron Rodgers with a case of deja vu. Is it possible it's going to be a super season for the Packers star? We'll answer all those questions as we get up with you on ESPN. We are back on Get Up. Dan Graziano, let's run the hurry up. Bunch of NFL news. Let's start in San Francisco.
Jimmy Garoppolo back at practice the last 2 days on a limited basis with that calf injury. There is optimism that he will be able to start Sunday. Trey Lance, who started the last game when Garoppolo was out, will not, it looks like, be healthy enough to play in that game. So it's going to have to be Garoppolo, and they're getting him ready to go as if he is the starter. Greeny. Jets item, Marcus May, safety, telling reporters yesterday he does not want to be traded. Of course, this conversation comes up because there's a lot of chatter around the league about him possibly being the kind of guy that's going to be on the block as the trade deadline approaches, now 11 days away. A lot of interested teams at that price, and if the Jets aren't going to sign him long term, it's possible he could be on the move whether he likes it or not. And then Bengals quarterback Joe Burrow remains on what the team is calling voice rest this week. He is practicing, but he's not doing press conferences because he's been told by doctors to rest his voice. Remember, he went to the hospital a couple of weeks ago after the game against Green Bay with a throat contusion, so they're trying to get that well, but there's no concern about him playing in this game in Baltimore Sunday. He'll be good to go.
Yeah, that's just an example, however, of how he's playing so well, but there's sort of a recklessness to him, which is sort of the beauty of him in some way,
yes.
Right? But at the same time, there's concern about the injury of it all. And so, RC, let me start with you. What are we paying closest attention to in this game? Because it is a battle for the top of the division, whether people are fully recognizing that in Cincinnati yet or not.
The dude's taking the snaps, and you just talked about Joe Burrow, and you talked about what Joe Burrow means to this team. Like, that dude is so different, and I know it comes from a little bit of my LSU fandom and the fact that he's also an alum, but when you watch Joe Burrow play, it's a football player, right? Joe Burrow's not just out there. He's not just standing in the pocket. The dudes aren't playing football around him, and Joe Burrow's playing quarterback. Joe Burrow's a part of the game. Joe Burrow is taking hits. Joe Burrow is fighting for the extra extra yards. Joe Burrow's making you feel that he's just like the other 10 dudes on the field. But that comes at peril sometimes. And it's the same thing with the dude on the other side. Lamar Jackson is willing this team to win. The first game that this team has won where Lamar Jackson didn't have to be Superman was against the Los Angeles Chargers. So this game is about those two young quarterbacks and their two teams. The Cincinnati Bengals are trying to get to the level that Lamar Jackson and the Baltimore Ravens are on. This is the week to do it, and they only get there if their young quarterback plays like a superstar.
And you know, and Ninko, I mean, the both quarterbacks fascinating. The first time you were ever on this show, you told us that you would consider taking Lamar Jackson ahead of Patrick Mahomes if the two were in similar circumstances, and we all thought you were out of your mind, and it doesn't sound quite so crazy right now. Well, how about Lamar, the season he's having, and what we expect from him against a really good Cincinnati defense?
Yeah, I can't go against Lamar. I just can't do it. I've been high on Lamar since he was drafted. I said he'd be the best pick out of the five quarterbacks drafted when he was the first-round pick from the Ravens. And listen, when I look at the Bengals, I respect their defense. They're the number five defense in the NFL. They went out, they got Trey Hendrickson. He seems to be a rising star. So they've won in their offseason with their additions defensively. When I look at Joe Burrow, he's super talented, and I love everything that I watch. From what I hear coming out of the team, though, they're telling them to slide a little bit more instead of taking the damage. But just what the Ravens are able to do and how explosive they are with Lamar and Mark Andrews and throwing the football, I got to go with the Ravens. I went with Cincinnati against the Packers, but the kicker let me down. The lonely kicker. So I'm going with the Ravens this time.
That was a disappointment. I'm not going. And in fact, I mean, even the opposing quarterback is telling Burrow to slide more. Yes. Who do you like in this game and why? Sacho.
Yeah, I like the Baltimore Ravens, but I just want to go to RC's point about these two quarterbacks. Like, yeah, they are the same when it comes to mentality. I remember when Lamar Jackson got drafted, 32nd overall, may not have been a first-round pick. And all I remember from that interview, he said, I'm going to make them eat their words. And ever since he got in the NFL, he's been making them eat their words. Then Joe Burrow, you go back and watch what he did at LSU, and I mean, that's not even bias. That's like greatness. Like, he was great at LSU, and then he's been great when he's been healthy in the NFL. These two quarterbacks have that kind of killer instinct mentality where no one is going to
stop them. And again, Burrow was the guy who was drafted originally at Ohio State, and he had to go and reprove himself. So he had doubters to overcome at a different level than in the same way that Lamar did, sort of. RC, who do you like in this game?
I'm going to take the Bengals, Greeny. It's paining me because Lamar's playing so good, but the Bengals find a way to pull this game out. I believe Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase, T. Higgins, Tyler Boyd on the offensive side of the ball, and the defense finds a way to make enough plays with the new pressure they can put on the quarterback with a guy like Trey Hendrickson to just edge out the Baltimore Ravens. Please don't crush me, people in Baltimore. I've been on y'all's side all season.
They've been real good. Grass, who you like?
I want to take the Bengals like RC, but I can't. I took the Chargers to beat the Ravens last week. They made me look terrible. I am not betting against Lamar. These might be my two favorite quarterbacks in the league right now, honestly, to watch. Love them both.
We will see.
Bengals could win.
You know who made a case to be your favorite quarterback last night?
Who's that?
Case Keenum. We're going to get to his highlights as we continue in a moment. And why one member of our crew says this game was Baker Mayfield's worst nightmare. Don't miss the highlights next. Get up on ESPN.